Welcome to EVA India Tax Insights podcast. I'm your host Pallavi, and we have a very special episode lined up for you today. With the Indian Union Budget 2024 just around the corner, there's a lot of anticipation and speculation about the changes we might see. To help us navigate through the possibilities, we're joined by Sonu Iyer, tax partner at EY India and a leader in people advisory services. With over 30 years in the field, Sonu's expertise in tax, employment law, and HR consulting is unparalleled. She's a champion in diversity and inclusiveness, and a key voice for reforms in India's tax and labor laws. As a member of EVA India Foundation Grant Committee, Sonu also helps us drive community-focused initiatives. Get ready for an insightful conversation on what the new budget could hold. Sonu, thank you for joining us, and we're delighted to have you in this episode.
Many thanks, Pallavi. It's my pleasure to be here with you to discuss what the new budget would bring.
Thank you, Sonu. To dive right in, there's a lot of buzz around the potential changes in income tax slabs and rates for individuals. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, Pallavi, that's right. There is a lot of expectation of a major change in the income tax regime that we currently have. So to be better able to explain this, let me just talk about what do we have currently. So currently, we've got two income tax regimes in place. One is the old tax regime, which has all the deductions. And then there was a new tax regime, new concessional tax regime, which was introduced by the government. And both coexist. The new tax regime's feature is that there's lower tax rate, but no deductions and exemptions at all. We did see standard deduction come into the new tax regime. But what it would be known for is a lower tax rate, but no specific lots of deductions and exemptions which are available in the old tax regime do not exist. So if I look at it, in the old tax regime, taxpayers continue to get exemptions like house rent allowance, interest on housing loan. There is ATC of 1,50,000, and then other deductions under Section 80D, 80G, 80TTA are all available under the old tax regime, but not there in the new tax regime that is there. And we've seen in the last few budgets, finance minister has been urging people to move towards the new tax regime, but we haven't seen a big movement into the new tax regime. And that reason could well be that people do their computations and find that because of HRA and deductions available, the old tax regime works out to be a better regime. So if I look at it under the old tax regime, the maximum amount of income not chargeable to tax is 2.5 lakhs. And for senior citizens, that goes up to 3 lakhs. And for super senior citizens, it's still higher. But under the new tax regime that exists today, the maximum amount exempt from tax is 3 lakhs across all ages. As I mentioned, that new tax regime has lower tax rates and wider slabs. So you'd see 3 lakhs to 6 lakhs being taxed at 5%, 6 lakhs to 9 lakhs at 10%, and so on. So above 15 lakhs, it goes up to 30%. And if you have total income of 7 lakh rupees with a rebate of 25,000 rupees, a person who has total income of 7 lakhs does not pay any tax. They have to file a return, but they do not pay any tax as such. Now, if I look at it, if the government really goes ahead and comes up with a unified tax regime, we will see some of the benefits of old and some of the reasons why new regime hasn't taken off being addressed. So what could happen, and this is me gazing into the crystal ball to say, okay, this is what the finance minister could come up with. First, if I look at it, a unified tax regime for us to be able to get the change management managed effectively, the maximum amount of income not chargeable to tax, which is currently at 3 lakhs in the new tax regime, in the unified tax regime, this could go up to 5 lakh rupees. What could happen? And then we could see the widening of the slab further. Maybe, the 30% tax rate probably could come in at maybe an income of 20 lakhs, and which will again help reduce the tax bill. I also feel that, people whose total income is up to 10 lakh rupees today could get away without having to pay any tax if the rebate is further increased. So this overhauling of the tax slabs, widening the slabs, changing the rates, increasing the maximum amount of income exempt from tax, that would really help, because when you look at it today, most people are expecting more money in their hands. So this change would certainly help many taxpayers, and will also help the economy, because you see more money in the hands of the people will mean people will go and spend more, they will save more, they'll invest more. And in general, the wheels of economy will move better. And certainly, the rationale for making this happen and not continuing with status quo is very much the fact that government does have the resources at its disposal. Remember, we've got a GDP growth of over 8%. We've got huge dividend from Reserve Bank of India coming into the hands of the government. So all of that should really help government take this leap, really, to move to a unified tax regime, which is more helpful and makes, overall the tax regime attractive in India. That's really my view, Pallavi, on this.
Thank you, Sonu. That would be a welcome change for many if implemented. Moving on to capital gains, what can taxpayers expect in this area?
On capital gains, again, this is something that has been on the table every budget. I think all the industry representations, individual expectations, the stock exchange representatives have all been asking for some sort of rationalization in taxation of capital gains, taxation for, different asset classes. Today, if I look at it, there is variation in terms of the holding period, the rate of tax, benefit of indexation, in terms of long-term capital gains tax availability for different asset classes. So, if you look at it, let me give you an example. When you sell a house today, you need to have held the house for more than 2 years for you to be able to get the long-term capital gains tax rate of 20% and the benefit of indexation. If you've not held it for 2 years or more than 2 years, then you'll end up paying short-term capital gains tax. If you look at gold, the ability to get long-term capital gains tax for gold is only if you've held the asset for more than 3 years. So you can see the variation. For housing, it is 2 years. For gold, it is 3 years. If I look at debt bonds now, debt bonds which were acquired prior to April 23, the holding period was 3 years and 20% tax rate for long-term capital gains to kick in. But then those debt bonds acquired after 1st April 23, get taxed as short-term capital gains, so there's no benefit of long-term capital gains there. Equity shares, when they're listed in the stock exchange, the holding period is 1 year and the tax rate is 10% after the threshold deduction of 1 lakh. If you have unlisted shares, then your holding period has to be 2 years and they get taxed at 15% or 20% really with indexation benefit. Whilst in equity-oriented mutual funds, again, the holding period is 1 year for 10% taxation. My point here really is that if you see all these asset classes, regular taxpayers would have, they have different holding periods, different rates of tax, and the fact of indexation benefit being available for some, not being available for some. This itself, lends to confusion, and anything which is causing confusion will create gaps in compliance. So therefore, it is expected that there will be some sort of rationalization of capital gains taxation. Now, whether or not there is any kind of, increase in the long-term capital gains bill because of change in rate, et cetera, we'll have to see, because this is always a tightrope walk. Will that create an impact in the market, which is really, really buoyant? So something that will have to be thought through. But some of these changes which we just talked about are long overdue and should happen, really.
Thank you, Sonu, for those insights. Now, regarding the other tax relief measures, what prospects and possibilities are on the horizon?
Well, when you asked me this question, and I really look back from a perspective of the fact that, the Prime Minister had set out this vision of developed India or Viksit Bharat by 2047. And when I look at a Viksit Bharat, one of the things that has to be there is an attractive personal tax regime. Because we are saying Viksit Bharat will come about when we are able to retain our you know, very bright minds in India. We are able to retain our entrepreneurs in India, and those will stay on or will come back to India if you have a personal tax regime that is attractive. It has to be really something that motivates them to be, you know, operating from India, they paying taxes in India, making it easier for people to pay taxes. So those, you know, it has to be a mega policy initiative and a determination that the tax regime, the personal tax regime, has to become attractive. And like we feel in many other economies that have done very well and have retained, you know, their talent in the country, it is the tax collections, if they have to be, you know, the revenue loss on the personal tax has to be mitigated, has to come through, you know, macroeconomic interventions, you know, or even if at a micro level, you want to be able to look at increasing the revenue for the government, look at maybe something like a securities transaction tax, which is today is at a very low rate, that could be increased marginally. And, you know, we could kind of take the benefit of huge volumes of transactions that you're seeing in the stock exchanges. We could look at some sort of a GST where a nominal increase can offset on the benefit that the government can pass on the personal tax regime. So from that perspective, you know, my hope is that, you know, government looks at it in line with its own vision of Viksit Bharat, thinks of, you know, how do we build the global financial hub in India? How do we retain entrepreneurial talent in India? What do we do to, you know, encourage skill upgradation, you know, innovation, etc.? So that incentivization should all come through a good, beneficial, benign personal tax regime. So, you know, I could go on this, but that's how I see. And I think some of these ideas should be also on the finance minister's mind, and we could see some of them come to pass as well.
Thank you, Sonu. And finally, the rationalization of direct taxes is always a delicate balance. So how do you think the government will approach this while trying to balance the revenue?
Right. So, Balbi, as I mentioned, you know, when I was talking earlier, I have a straight, you know, answer on this, that today I would think that we are placed in the best possible position to do, you know, some of the things that we are suggesting. Simply because, as I mentioned, that the RBI dividend is with the government. Government is also benefiting from increased GST collections. We are also talking about GDP growth, which has been, you know, really over 8%. And even if you're predicting a GDP growth of over 7%, there is this buoyancy in the Indian economy, which we can only hopefully go, you know, further from there. So revenue loss can be offset by, you know, making all of these changes from a perspective of, if you are able to successfully create an entrepreneurial culture, if you're able to build innovation hubs in India, if you're able to create financial hubs in India, we will see so much more capital coming into India that all of this can be mitigated very easily. You can give yourself a time horizon of maybe next to 2, 3, 5 years, where other macro factors will help play up and help collect revenue, rather than looking towards that, you know, small minority of taxpayers to be funding some of these things. So I'm very, very hopeful that, you know, the other, you know, macroeconomic interventions can help the government offset the loss of revenue. And, you know, if I could just say that, you know, when you're creating more white collar jobs and, you know, taking people up on the whole value chain of service exports, and you're leaving more income in the hands of the people, you're really helping the cause of the economy. That's when people have more time or more money to go and spend in the market. They'll also look for investments. So it's serving multiple causes. So I think now is the best time to go for it.
Thank you, Sonu. Thank you for sharing those valuable insights on what we can expect from the Union Budget 2024. It's certainly going to be an interesting time for taxpayers and professionals alike.
Thanks, Pallavi. Keep in mind that, you know, the interim budget expectations were rolled over to the final budget of 24. So a lot of people are expecting the finance minister to present a blockbuster budget, at least from a personal tax standpoint. So, but we'll wait and see what happens. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Sonu. And with that, we wrap today's episode. Thank you to all our listeners for tuning in today. Stay informed about the Union Budget 2024 with EY India Tax Insights. Until next time, this is Pallavi signing off.